As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I am Joe, joined as always by
Vincent Caldoni.
And this week we've got another, by the way, listener warning here, this week's episode contains no murders, no bloodshed, no guts and gore. Sorry about that.
That we know of.
Yeah, listener discretion is advised. It is a rather epic story, though. I think you'd have to agree, right, Vincent?
Oh, I think the story's really epic. I'm surprised they've never made a movie out of this.
Yeah, no, they probably will now that we've got to put it out there. Yeah, I think somebody did actually write a play about this, believe it or not. Way, way back when. Yeah, there was a play written about it.
Sounds familiar.
Well, anyway, let's get on. We're teasing. Okay, so we're talking about the epic journey of Lillian Alling, who walked all the way from New York to Russia and possibly beyond back in the 1920s.
Yeah, true.
It's kind of a mystery, actually. Nobody knows exactly what became of her. At a certain point, people lost track of her. She was lost to history, and that's where the mystery comes in. But it's an interesting story.
Who was she? Well, the thing is, the accounts vary. One writer named Cassandra Wyman, whose book I have to confess I actually haven't read.
Me neither, actually. I've read about her book. I haven't read the book.
But exactly. She concluded that Lillian was from Belarusia and had migrated to the U.S. by herself in the 1920s. Another author said that she was born in New Jersey of immigrant parents from Denmark. I'm inclined toward this latter theory.
Yeah. Well, the guy that said this is a guy named Sven Karsten, who wrote on his blog in Russian. He actually reproduces a photograph of the 1910 census in the U.S. Of a page from that's got Lillian and her parents and some of her siblings on it. And it lists her birthplace as actually New Jersey, Perth Amboy, New Jersey.
So that actually makes a lot more sense to me than being from Belarusia. I did look up.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at websites that will tell you the frequency of a last name and like what country it comes from, its origins, and how likely it is and where into other countries it's spread.
Yeah.
Alling is a common Danish name. It shows up in Sweden, a little bit in Norway, shows up a lot in certain parts of the U.S. and Canada. But it is not a name you would really see in 19th century, early 20th century Belarus.
Yeah.
And Lillian was one of the most popular names for girls in the era that this woman would have been born in the United States.
Yeah.
So that just by her name alone, being the child of Danish immigrants to New Jersey, makes really good sense compared to being from Belarus. That said, she could have changed her name.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's confusing, but but whatever the truth of this thing is, apparently Lillian at a certain point decided that she was fed up with her life and she decided to go back to the old country, wherever that old country was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does appear from the record that her life was a lot of hard work, a lot of drudgery.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a woman. She was single. She didn't have much much in the way of marketable skills. So she had to work a series of low paying jobs to kind of get by. I mean, you know, you got to be thinking this is like 1920s, pre-1920s. East Coast is probably going to be a lot of service and industrial jobs that are
extremely low paying. Yes.
Extremely low paying. The living conditions were not great.
Mm-hmm.
She also, though, had this really reserved personality. And, you know, I don't like using psychological terms to diagnose historical figures or people we talk about on the podcast, but I get the feeling that we'd be tossing around terms, and I'm doing air quotes, no one can see, like autistic spectrum or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think so, too. There was something going on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she was able to speak, but she just really, really didn't like to.
Yeah. And that really tracks with, you know, different kinds of, you know, neuroatypical behaviors, which makes it hard. It makes it hard to fit in.
Yeah, it also made it hard to make friends. She didn't have any, apparently. So she was a pretty lonely person on top of everything else.
Right.
Alas.
Right.
Yeah. In the other version of this story, Lillian actually had a home with her family. So she wasn't just living in some tenement somewhere, you know, all by herself. She had a family, but she was an old maid. Her siblings, both older and younger, so I think there were five kids total in her family. They were getting married and moving out, moving on with their lives. But Lillian, because of her personality, had not found herself a guy. So since she was still at home, she was expected to earn her keep by doing the cooking and cleaning and washing. And of course, as siblings moved out, more of that stuff fell on her. She was doing all of it. This is not quite as bad as working all day in some sweatshop just to pay the rent on your dingy little room in the slums, but still not the kind of life that most of us would dream of, right?
Right.
No.
Right. So let's just talk for a second about why Lillian was such an unmarriageable oddball. She was the third of five children. She was born in 1897. She reportedly had been a very unhealthy baby, like so unhealthy she was not expected to survive into, you know, past infancy.
Yeah.
But she did. And it seems that that unhealthy start to her life caused a certain developmental issues. It's unknown if she was developmentally delayed, but it kind of appears that she was.
Yeah, or again, possibly just autistic and actually, you know.
Yeah, well, that's something that they actually find frequently about, you know, people who are neurotypical, who fall on that autism spectrum. Often they are branded as being delayed in development, what in Lillian's time they would call retarded, because there are certain benchmarks we expect a child to meet, like talking, walking.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But they may not have an interest in these things. And it actually, I mean, it's going to make it harder for them to get along in society, but it doesn't really mean that there's anything, you know, wrong with them, that they're like sick or whatever, you know?
Yeah, they're not stupid necessarily.
Exactly.
But yeah. But it was assumed, I think, in Lillian's case that she was, you know, stupid.
Right. Maybe, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is there may have not been anything damaged in her.
Yeah, maybe not.
By these illnesses she faced.
But she was unusual, let's see.
I think that goes without say.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, her utterly silent nature made it really impossible for her to have a career. How are you going to have jobs or even a social life? You gotta talk to people sometimes.
Yeah.
So I like this one, that she just stayed at home, was kind of maybe isolated.
Yeah.
This part of New Jersey would have been probably a lot more pleasant to live in than, say, you know, like Trenton or Hoboken, but it also might have felt really distant and lonely, just kind of stuck in the house, unable to connect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, frustrating when you see your peers and your siblings marrying and moving out and moving on with their lives, and you're stuck in the same spot. But there was a guy I mentioned before, Sven Karsten, researched her life and wrote a long blog post about her. And according to him, the event that really tore it for Lillian was when her younger sister, Minnie, got engaged. Lillian at this time was about 30 years old. She was either 30 or, you know, just about to turn 30. And back in the 1920s, this was definitely old maid territory. Not so much today, but back in those days, yeah, it was. And she realized then that she was stuck and that she would never be happy if she stayed where she was. So she just kind of threw a fit. I think some unkind words were said all the way around, not just by her, but to her by some other members of the family. And she decided to essentially run away from home. She left the house wearing her hiking shoes. She stuffed some clothes in a canvas bag, along with a jar that contained her life savings, which was reportedly as much as maybe several several hundred bucks.
She'd actually spent a lot of money back then.
Oh, a hell of a lot of money. And apparently she had been saving her money for maybe as a dowry for whenever she did wind up finding a guy. I remember women were supposed to have dowries back in those days.
Really? I didn't even think about that. How common would that have been in the 1920s in the U.S.?
I have no idea. It still would have been a thing, but, you know, it wasn't the same kind of requirement probably as it was back in, say, the 19th century.
I wonder if that was a thing among Danish communities, like Danish American communities did that.
Very, very possibly so.
I could have looked this up before I recorded, but it didn't even occur to me.
Well, it might have been too that she just decided to save her money just because, you know, I mean, she wasn't going out clubbing or anything like that. So she had not much to spend her allowance on. So she just squirreled it away. You know, I don't know.
Well, yeah. And if she wasn't feeling, you know, happy with her family life, with her home life, it may have just felt like a good safety net to have some money in case she decided she couldn't take it one day and decided to walk to the ends of the earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it appears that her action plan was to get back to the old country, and whether that was Belarus or Denmark, I don't know, but she was maybe thinking that life would be better. And, you know, even if she was born, say, let's say in New Jersey, perhaps her immigrant parents talked a lot about the old country and sort of described it in idyllic terms. And she just was thinking, wow, that sounds like the kind of place I would really like to live. Maybe I would fit in better there, you know?
Well, you can also imagine maybe just sort of seeing the pattern in reverse, right? Maybe I'm just totally spitballing here, but maybe her folks, you know, were like, yeah, I wasn't happy. And so I packed up what little I could and I got on the boat and I went someplace new to start a new life. And it turned things around. And she's like, I'm just going to do the reverse. I'm going to get back on the boat and start over somewhere else.
So that's what she was thinking, apparently. But she couldn't afford a ticket on a steamship across the pond.
But couldn't she? How much did that cost?
It actually was not as fantastically expensive as you would think. I did a little research and I found that in the year like 1916, which is when the survey ended, you could buy a first-class ticket on a steamer across the pond, like from New York to Liverpool, for between $80 and $100. And so obviously steerage would be way cheaper than that.
So she had the money.
Yeah, and I adjusted it. I also adjusted it for inflation too. So we're still talking like maybe $130 to $160 for, again, first-class passage. And so she definitely, if she had several hundred bucks, then she definitely could have afforded that ticket.
Yeah, I guess that does eat into her nest egg. But sorry, I just wanted this on the table because I was glad you went and did that research.
Yeah.
I think this factors in. I have a theory about this.
Yeah.
So let's keep going and we'll double back.
Yeah, I've got a few theories actually. But she decided not to take a ship. She decided instead, she studied some maps and she decided that she could just walk all the way home. She'd have to take a little boat ride across the Bering Strait, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's about it. She could walk the rest of the way, which is a radical idea, right?
Have you ever, like, watched, you know, Deadliest Catch or something? Or, like, seen video of the Bering? It's not just a little... There's a reason why we're not like, hey, the quickest way to Russia is the Bering Strait.
I'm sure that the weather is pretty ferocious up there.
There's some big water and a lot of rocks. I don't think it'd be a very pleasant ride.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But Lillian was determined.
Yeah.
Or maybe just crazy. I don't know. But
in the long run, is there a difference?
But it seems like a crazy plan. But again, you know, a lot of people, they look at the map and they look at the map and it's like, oh, that looks like a piece of cake, you know? She would not be the only person who ever looked at a map and said, hey, that looks easy, right? I've actually done it myself a few times then to get out there and discover in real life the map and reality are a lot different.
That is one of my, I think my, and because I'm not just talking about navigation, but life. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes, the map is not the terrain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there it is. She's seen the maps. She knows what she's going to do.
Lillian headed west. She walked about 30 miles a day, which is good. That's a good. That's a good pace. That's moving at a clip. Yeah. She was probably putting in long days on her feet. She ate as cheaply as she could, and she stayed in guest houses or hotels, whichever she could find that was the cheapest. And along the way, she came across a piece of steel pipe and began using that as a walking stick, and of course, to have as a weapon.
Oh, yeah, just in case.
And that pipe became her trademark. As for her family, they never reported her missing. There's no record of them doing anything to look for her, which is kind of odd, kind of sad.
Yeah.
This explains why Lillian left, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe she didn't feel valued there, and that's kind of sad. I guess the other thought I had is maybe she told him. Maybe she talked about it for years. I'm going on this hike. I'm going to walk around the world. I'm going to circumnavigate the globe and go back to our ancestral home. Mm-hmm. And maybe they decided they just couldn't argue with her about it anymore.
Yeah, well, she was an adult. They couldn't, you know, so yeah. You know, what are you going to say? She's an adult. You could try to argue her out of it. And if she can yeah, insists on doing it. Well, okay. So it is kind of sad, though. But anyway, leaving the family aside, she's on the road. Within a month, she had passed Chicago. Then she turned northwest and headed through Wisconsin, Minnesota. And eventually got across the border, got to Winnipeg, and turned west again and continued across the plains of Canada, still walking and, you know, at a brisk pace, doing about 30 miles a day, where when she could, she would get maybe sleep in a farmer's barn. Usually they would let people do that for free. Yeah. And so
I'd imagine if there was, you know, a relatively young woman all by herself with a steel pipe and a satchel, nothing else, that you could see a farmer being more willing than your average hobo to be like, jeez, lady, take a rest in the barn.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they probably a lot of people took pity on her or whatever, and just said, yeah, absolutely. You know, but and she wasn't threatening.
Yeah.
But, so by August 1927, she was within view of the Canadian Rockies. And since it was still a summer, she was actually able to get across the mountains.
Yeah.
And into she
That's
was
great. In, yeah, it's really amazing. It's a really impressive time.
It is.
She's traveling light, but wow.
Yeah. It's and so she was. And so she got across and into British Columbia by the fall. Mm-hmm. And then at the town of Prince George, she came across the Yukon Telegraph Line, mm-hmm. which was kind of a lucky event for her. And she wound up following this road. This road went north, went from south of BC, clear up into the Yukon. It begins in the town.
When is she hitting Prince George? What time of year would this be?
Prince George, this would have been in like September, either the end of August 27 or early September 1927.
All right.
And
pretty good.
Yeah. And so the weather is still not turned. It's, you know, I'm sure it's cooling down, but it's not winter yet.
Yeah. I've been to Prince George. You'd be getting cooler nights. So you probably still got to get some decent weather ahead of you.
Yeah. A little bit, but she's heading northward, of course, you know, and it's going to get cooler. But and let me tell you about the telegraph line, the Yukon Telegraph Line. That was actually put into place around the turn of the century because of the sudden increase in population in the Yukon Territory. And you can probably guess why that happened. There was a big old gold rush, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, a lot of people were moving there. And so a private company decided to establish a telegraph line, which is basically they put in a road that went, again, a long, long, I don't know what, 1,000 miles or more from Ashcroft in the south all the way to Dawson City in the north.
Wow. That's and, long telegraph.
And of course, you got to have a road because you got to bring in wagons with telegraph, with the poles and the wires and everything. You know, and then every 30 miles or so, they would build a small hut. And then every 30 miles or so, they built a hut, and the two men lived in this hut. And one of them, at least, was able to operate the telegraph, and the other one was basically in charge of maintaining the lines in that their little stretch of the whole thing.
Right. So, well, yeah. And then the whole thing behind a telegraph road, and you'll see this actually with power lines a little bit too.
Yeah.
Is that you need to clear the area out around it because all this communication that people are depending on comes across a single wire, essentially.
Yeah.
Maybe a few wires. Anything falls on that wire, everyone down the line is in some big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So what they would do to save up constant maintenance cost and preserve the reliability of the line is they'd cut the tree line back away from the poles.
Yeah.
So even though you've basically just got what looks like a, you know, telephone line like you'd see on your street running a long distance, the infrastructure is about cutting the forest and whatever else back from it so that it can't be, but it's a lot harder to do damage to the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so
and you can follow that like a road.
Yeah. It would be a nice passable road. I mean, basically, it's just a dirt road. But, you know, for those days, especially in places like British Columbia, that was pretty good.
The Yukon. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's heading up this road.
So in September of 1927, she comes to the town of Hazelton, B.C. And this is pretty far north in B.C.
Yeah.
Where she's already known, thanks to the telegraph men.
She would stay with the telegraph men, and they were friendly to her. They'd let her sleep over, give her a hot meal. And of course, they would always relay news of this strange woman ahead to the next telegraph station.
Right. Because if you think about it, like, it's actually like weirdly perfect. Lillian's making about 30 miles a day. There's a hut about every 30 miles.
Well, I know, right?
With someone who would probably be very happy for some company.
Yeah.
And this road is like, this is what you got to understand, kind of why I went deep on what telegraph roads are.
Yeah.
Roads, most roads take you to towns and things. They tend to meander. This road is going to take a beeline to Dawson City because it's not built for travel. It's built for telegraph lines.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's perfect for her in that there's about once a day, she's going to meet with someone who can help her along her way. And it's going to make the road way straighter and way quicker. It's like an expressway built just for her.
Yeah, exactly.
So she stays in Hazleton for a few days. Hazleton was a pretty big town by Northern BC standards of the time. It even had its own newspaper, which of course ran a story or two about Lillian Alling, the woman of mystery.
Which she was, because frankly, you know, she wasn't very talkative. She, and people were all like, you know, well, what are you doing? Where are you going? And she'd be like, she wouldn't say anything. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. I don't think she was interested in doing pressers. But I think in some ways this gets to kind of like why we're talking about like two totally distinct origin stories. And, you know, there's this whole so like one thing I was thinking about as I read your script, Joe.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about like, oh, she was trying to get back to the old world. Mm-hmm. Was she? Who'd she tell that to?
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody might have, some newspaper men might have just made that up, because especially given that Lillian wouldn't talk to them.
So exactly.
They just figure, well, this makes sense. She's trying to get back to the old country. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Lillian herself ever said, I'm going back to my home in Denmark this weird way. So keep that in mind, because I think that's really important.
And it might be, too, that the fact that she was not able to talk or not willing to talk, that might have made them draw the conclusion that she couldn't speak English. And that's why she wasn't talking. And so they concluded, she must be an immigrant. She must be an immigrant who can't speak English. And so she must be headed home.
Yeah.
You know? Reasonable conclusion, actually. You know?
Yeah, sure. Right. Yeah.
Wasn't necessarily true, but you know.
Exactly. I'm going to push this in the theory section.
Yeah.
So Lillian left Hazleton with basically no fanfare, just kind of slipped out and continued up the Telegraph Road. Telegraph guys, they sent word back to Hazleton and the local sheriff, Charles Greenfield. He decided there was no way Lillian was going to survive in the mountains with winter coming on. And he is, I think,
probably
pretty correct. I don't know.
I, so.
I haven't been as far north as this area ever in my life, but I had to do the Alaska Panhandle.
She was not at all equipped for this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. So what I was going to say is I have been to like the Alaska Panhandle, which you're getting into that kind of latitude.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, you know, you got to be prepared even in the fall. Like, it's not going to be super cold in the fall, but what it is is it gets damp. Man, it just rains all day and night in the late fall. And, you know, you're talking, you know, it doesn't sound that extreme when you're talking about 40 degrees and soaking wet, but it really, after a few days, it's going to wear on you so bad. And you are getting hypothermia at those temperatures.
Oh, yeah. And not to mention like pneumonia. But you're gonna.
So this Greenfield guy, he decides he's going to do her a solid, and he sent a deputy up the line on a horse to find her. And he did. And they arrested her for vagrancy and brought her back to Hazleton. When they searched her backpack, they found 3 pieces of bread and some dry tea.
Wow.
She had no matches. That's a big one.
Yeah.
No spare clothes. Also a big one. Remember, it's going to get wet if it's wet already. But really anything that would keep her alive in the mountains in winter.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no snowshoes, no, you know, woolly socks or gloves or whatever. Yeah, she was the sheriff, I'm sure, he saved her life, I think, by arresting her.
I think you're totally right. I think she'd have died up in those mountains in the winter.
Yeah. So Lillian was went before the justice of the peace or whatever they had up there, and was given a $25 fine for vagrancy. And since she didn't have 25 bucks, and the sheriff knew this, of course, since they had searched her stuff, she was given some jail time in lieu of the fine. So she was sent off to Ocala Prison in Vancouver, BC, where she spent the winter of 1927-28. And she was a model prisoner, actually. They strongly discouraged the prisoners from speaking to one another, and because they didn't want to encourage conspiracies, et cetera. And that was totally fine with Lillian.
Right.
And plus, the guards went easy on her because they had heard her story and they knew that she really wasn't actually a criminal. You know? So they, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I probably got around that this Green, what's the name, Greenfield?
Charles
Greenfield was doing her a favor by getting her bust. She wasn't really a criminal. She wasn't a menace to society. He just wanted to put her somewhere for the winter.
A very odd person who, needed looking after.
which was a thing that happened in the 20s, as weird as it is. If you read, like, O. Henry has a couple stories about cops being nice and arresting people in the dead of winter so that they can for vagrancy, so they can stay in a warm prison. The guards even went so far as to find her a job for when she was released. She got out in January of 1928, and they got her work in the kitchen of a restaurant. pretty nice of them. I don't think most prison guards do that for their inmates.
No, not at all.
It's Canadian hospitality for you.
I know, right? They're so polite. Yeah.
But she couldn't stay still for long. And by June of 1928, she hit the road again, and she was spotted in the vicinity of Hazleton once more.
In July, yeah, I think.
July of 28.
Yeah.
She was heading back up the telegraph line for the Yukon. Couldn't keep her wow.
Yeah. And this time they really couldn't stop her. So they just let her go on. I think they did extract a promise from her to check in at every station of the telegraph line.
Yeah.
So they could get word that she was okay. And then the telegraph workers essentially passed her up the line, and they would notify the guys in the previous station that she had arrived safely. And they would let the guys in the station up ahead know that she was heading their way. And of course, at every telegraph hut, she got hot food and a place to spend the night. They'd help her mend her gear. Sometimes they would give her clothing, boots if she needed them. And then the best present of all, somebody gave her a dog, a handsome little black and white husky named Bruno. And there's only a few photos actually of Lily and Alling that were ever taken. But one of them, you can see her, she's posing in front of some mountains in the background with Bruno, the dog. Bruno's wearing a very cute little backpack himself. Well, actually saddlebag.
Little doggy backpack.
Yeah. Good old Bruno. He looked like a nice pup.
It's good to have a dog when you're traveling like that.
I would think so.
Yeah. Bruno, though, he met a tragic end. He ate a piece of poisoned meat, which, if you will remember the Beast of Gévaudan story, I don't know if this would be the case with Bruno, but I suspect someone put it out to reduce the wolf population.
You know, that's what it was, is there's these people around this one river. It's the Iskook River. Apparently had there was some sort of a wolf that was actually predating upon their animals or even people or whatever. So they were leaving poison meat laced with strychnine around for the wolf to ingest. And unfortunately, poor Bruno got his hands on one of these chunks of meat and ate it.
Right.
So, yeah.
No, that was a blow to Lillian. I think that really probably was a major loss for her, but she kept on keeping on. On October 25th, she entered the town of Dawson City in the Yukon Territory, which had a few years prior been the site and kind of the big jumping off point for the Yukon Gold Rush.
Yeah, it was. And also the end of the Telegraph Trail.
Yeah, so this is where you're really hitting. I mean, not that this was not some wild, wild country she was in before, but this is where you're really getting into, you know, into what even in the 20s was still very much the frontier.
Oh, yeah. Wilderness. The easy going on the Telegraph Trail was no more.
Winter is coming on. So Lillian was forced to spend winter in the town where she was kind of a celebrity around Dawson City. She was the famous mystery woman who was hiking to someplace.
Somewhere, I know exactly. Nobody's told me where. Yeah, I know. Maybe Lillian was cagier than we think. Maybe she was actually perfectly talkative, but she chose to do this silent thing just so she would become a person of mystery.
Maybe.
And, you know, maybe that's what she did. I don't know.
Heck probably of a long con you got there, Joe. But yeah.
I know.
So she took some odd jobs and she spent her time repairing a small boat that somebody gave her. And in the spring, Lillian Alling climbed in that boat and set off down the Yukon River. Her destination was alleged to be the Bering Sea. That's where it would take her, right?
Eventually, by a very circuitous route from Dawson City, it kind of heads northwest quite for about 300 miles, and then it sort of bends around and heads west for a little while, then bends around southwest. And, you know, we're probably looking at 1,000+ miles of river travel. If she planned on staying all the way to the Bering Sea, and maybe she planned on hopping off at some point, because it would have actually put her on the Bering Sea way, way far south of the Bering Strait itself. So if she could find a nice road to hop off on and head west, you know, then that would have made sense. But we don't know. She didn't tell anybody exactly what her plans were. And we don't know. That was the end of her story, as far as we know. It was the last confirmed sighting of Lillian Alling, just in her little boat heading off down the wild river into the wilderness.
Yeah.
There were some reports about her, but these are all second, third hand reports. Like, you know, a friend of mine knows a guy who says he saw her in Nome.
Okay.
Or some Eskimo said that he heard from someone that she negotiated with some other Eskimos, names unknown, to take her by boat across the Bering Strait, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But nothing that you could really put a lot of weight on.
Well, okay. But then if you think about it, I mean, I guess if you want to Eskimo, what a term, Joe.
It is a little bit. I think Inuit is the more preferred term.
Well, it's also because you get into this whole thing where, you know, we basically decided that there was one word to describe all of the tribes that live along this giant swath of land just because it's far enough north.
Yeah, no, that's true, too. Yeah, if you see some guy who looks like a native and he's wearing you know, furry clothes and stuff. Wow, there's an Eskimo.
Right, there's an Inuit. It's not, it's just not descriptive. But anyway, but then you get into this whole thing, right? And this is one of the things with historical mysteries. There's been a little debate on our Facebook page about, you know, some people love historical mysteries, some people don't. You know, if you were some miner or some prospector out in the Yukon Territory, if you're, a native person in a little village along the Bering Strait, you don't, you know, your ability to record and make statements to the press is pretty limited. So you can say, well, that's a secondhand account. We don't know if she even made it there. But then again, if she did make it there, how would we know she made it there or didn't? Right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, no, we don't really know. I mean, yeah, these are all verbal accounts.
So if she did make it there, who would be the person to tell us? A member of a local tribe, maybe a tribal elder. He'd have to get it back to some white guy of authority who would then have to record it in such a manner that would be researchable. You know what I mean? I just want to give people a picture of how remote, even in the late 1920s, this part of Alaska was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's still a fairly underpopulated place, frankly, compared to the lower 48. But in those days.
Yeah. You can wander out into the Alaskan interior, into the bush, and I mean, man, you know, never be seen again. It happens.
That's happening.
It happens to this very day.
Quite a lot. Some people do it on purpose. Some people not quite so much.
All right. Well, let's get back to what we really know, what we definitely know for sure. What we really know is that she was seen in a boat headed into the wilderness on the Yukon River. And that's about it.
Yeah.
The fate of Lillian Alling, it's a mystery.
It's an enigma. Yep. Yeah. And really, there's two mysteries here.
Exactly. One is what happened to Lillian. And two, and this is the one I've been kind of focusing on a little bit. What was she trying to accomplish?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've wondered the same thing myself. So, we're going to have an extra long theory section.
Heck yeah, we are.
But before we do that, I think we probably need to hear a word from our sponsor.
Let's do that.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, time for some theories. I will start, first of all, with the fate of Lillian. What happened to her? Again, as we last said, she was seen heading off in her little boat down the Yukon River. And so there's many, many possibilities out there in the wilderness. One is that she was eaten by bears.
Right, blame the bears. Why don't you?
Well, I know. I'm picking on the bears again. Poor bears. this is, of course, entirely, I mean, animal predation is entirely possible in this case. But
it is my thing with the bears, right? So you can always run afoul. You can get between a mother and her cub. It can happen to you. But if she was eaten by bears, the most likely case for the bears to be the perp here would have to mean that she kept going until fall, until the salmon runs. See, a grizzly bear is way more likely to kill a human. They don't really predate humans as a rule.
No, they're actually not interested in humans. If you don't mess with them, they'll leave you alone. You know,
And it means that if bears are really the culprit here, she made it a long time, which is possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't mean it when I put this down on the list. I didn't mean just by bears. I should have put just animal predation. Yeah. I mean, let's take this for example. She heads off down the river. She's 100 yards away, goes around the bend, gets dumped out of her boat, swims to shore, and a pack of wolves eat her. You know, maybe something like that.
I mean, it's possible.
It's possible. Yeah. It's entirely possible that animals did her in. It's more likely that just good old, the elements.
Are a much more likely candidate, honestly, depending on how well prepared for this trip she was. I just think the temperatures, the winds and the water and the cold would get you first. But I do want to put out a really morbid theory. You know what a good way to defend yourself against a bear is?
Run away?
No, it's a terrible way. You make a bunch of noise.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know who didn't like making noise?
No, who?
Lillian Alley.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, she looks at the bear, and the bear's like, brr. She's like staring silently at him.
Yeah, exactly.
Great strategy, Lillian.
But especially if she came upon a male black bear.
Yeah.
The best way to defend yourself is just to start screaming at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, making a lot of noise can also aggravate a grizzly bear. So there's that. Yeah. But yeah, I just thought that that's like, of all the dark, sad, depressing scenarios, that might be the saddest one. She refused to yell at it, and that's what got her.
Oh, man. But I think there's actually a more likely possibility, which is that she drowned. That's much more likely, I think, than animals eating on her. Because the last confirmed sighting, she's heading off down the Yukon River in a small boat that she had personally repaired herself. I don't know how competent a boat repairman she was.
Just for reference, let's just say she's great at it and she has people to help her.
Did actually get a little help. Yeah.
Go on the internet when you're someplace safe to do that, right? So like if you're driving, don't start Googling. Do an image search for the Yukon River.
It's a wild river.
This is not a lazy river float, man. This would be really intimidating, especially in a hard bottom boat.
Yeah.
That's pretty scary.
I assume that Lillian had no experience whatsoever in boating, much less taking a boat through like whitewater. And this the Yukon River was a wild, untamed river with lots of that frothy white stuff. And you got to really know what you're doing. You might be able to fumble your way through a river like that in an inflatable whitewater raft.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it with my friends where we screwed up, lost control, and went through backwards to some really wild rapids and stuff. And we still came out okay.
Yep.
But, you know, in a hard shell boat like that, nah, not so much so. You're just going to get dumped in the water and drowned, you know. And again, I'm sure she wasn't wearing a life vest and, you know, wearing just canvas or woolen clothing that would immediately just get all waterlogged and drag her under. But I know that as far as I know, the nearest settlement down that river was about 300 miles away. River miles, that would be Fort Yukon, which is actually in Alaska. They didn't mention Dawson City is actually only about 50 miles from the Alaska frontier.
Yeah. So the way it worked back in the day, not that this is super relevant for our story, but it's kind of interesting. Dawson City, so it was hard to get to Alaska. So what guys would do, and this is where the gold was, it was in the basically on the other side of the border. So what guys would do back in the day is they'd come from the US, well, really from all over the world, but particularly they'd end up in like San Francisco or Seattle or BC, and they'd head north and they'd get into Dawson City. And Dawson City was really the last spot where you could get supplies, get maps, whatever, hear the local tales about where there was gold. And then you'd ascend a hill, you'd drop back down into the American territory, and you were on your own out there.
Yeah.
It's worth noting because that killed a lot of gold prospectors, and it wouldn't have probably been great odds for Lillian, unfortunately.
Probably not. So anyway, if she made it all the way to Alaska, even that's a big if. I mean, but even if she did, she probably would have stopped it at Fort Yukon, but she never did. She was, there were no reports that she ever showed up there. I don't know. Some sort of river mishap seems quite likely. Although I don't want to sound like I'm dissing the bear theory, because maybe she came ashore to go to the bathroom and forage for berries and nuts, and the bears nabbed her then. You know, maybe. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, Berry Patch. That'd be a good place to have a bad run-in with a black bear. But
or maybe she came to shore, she saw some salmon jumping and just waited out there to grab one, and the bears saw that.
Well, she wouldn't have been seeing any salmon jumping in the Yukon unless she made it all the way into the late summer at the earliest.
Okay. Never mind then. But anyway, I just didn't want to leave the bears out. But no, I think that drowning seems like such a much likelier possibility than most other things, you know. It just seems unlikely that she could have made it very far down that river without dumping the boat.
Yeah, you know? I definitely feel that. And it is possible she could have dumped the boat and survived. Maybe she saw some of those rapids, pulled ashore and said, nope, not doing this anymore, and continued walking. Maybe she just found the boat. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what she died. But of all of them, I'm honestly kind of with you, Joe. I feel like river mishap of some kind is probably what got her.
Yeah, although it's possible again that she dumped it, but not too far from shore. She was able to get to shore and maybe dry out a little bit, but she just wasn't that well equipped, and eventually got lost in the woods and died of exposure. So there's that possibility as well.
Can't tell you how scary it is to be in a remote environment like that, especially that far north and wet.
Oh yeah. That's serious.
It really is, man. Read some Jack London. Getting wet is enough to kill you. It doesn't seem like it would be. It's so lame to be like, I died of getting splashed, but that can kill you.
Oh, I know. That's why it drives me nuts. Like, you know, in the movies and stuff, you know, when our hero, like, you know, falls into the cold, frothy river and gets out and he's soaked to the bone and it just continues on, you know, that seems to happen a lot in Hollywood, you know, and it's like, dude, no, that drives me crazy because, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, me too. But it's also such like terrible storytelling to be like, oh, this character we followed for the last hour got damp and died from that.
Yeah, it is. And I know obviously it sort of interrupts the plot if you show Bruce Willis stopping and building a fire and drying his clothes out for a couple of hours. You know,
actually I think totally nails it since if I can just get into movie territory for a second is the 1993 White Fang movie. With Ethan Hawke.
There's
a really great scene where he drops through the ice. Ooh. And they go through all the steps of the old prospector helps him out and he can't wear his clothes. They're going to keep cooling him off. So he has to strip buck naked, sit right next to the fire and basically freeze to death naked in the middle of the night while his clothes dry out, trying to stay warm on this little ass fire. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a really harrowing scene that demonstrates how big a deal it is if you get wet in these conditions.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'll have to see that. I never saw that one. But more things that could have happened to Lillian, more possible fates. You got any good ideas? What do you think? Any other theories?
Well, let's try this one out.
Yeah.
Okay. You wrote, I'm going to dump on your script a little.
Yeah.
Serial killer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not? So, I like it.
So Lillian would have made a great victim for some sort of homicidal American or Canadian looking to kill someone and get away with it. I don't know that necessarily makes it a serial killer, but death by human misadventure, I think I just made that term up, is a possibility. You're out in the middle of nowhere. These people make their own rules. And if, I don't know, if she met up with the wrong kind of person, it is a possibility we have to think about. Not everybody up there was as kind-hearted as Sheriff Greenfield or his deputies or the telegraph men. There were some bad folks running around the Yukon and Alaska at this time.
Yeah, and she would be the perfect victim because...
Oh, right?
If she came to your town and then disappeared, people would assume that she had just headed on down the road, right? Right,
or your camp, if it was just like a little camp.
Yeah.
And if she never showed up anywhere else, people would assume that she'd been, like we said, eaten by bears or drowned or died of hypothermia or whatever. So I wouldn't count this one out. I don't know about serial killer. Sounds like a little bit of a jump.
Let's just put in random murder. You know,
I think she could have been the victim of some type of crime. I do think it's actually probably not super far-fetched.
Yeah, no, I still think it's more likely she drowned in the Yukon River. But yeah, the murder is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people out there who believe that she actually made it across the Bering Strait and made it back to Siberia and maybe even all the way home. Some people think so.
There are people who think so. I had read, here's some, maybe a little more information than you ever wanted to hear about how we do our podcast. We make lists of stories we might cover. Mm-hmm. And then usually we just kind of scratch the surface of the mystery. I was sure, Joe, that I had heard that some people in Russia said that they had met a traveling woman who didn't talk. Mm-hmm. And I tried to see if I could redig up those accounts and I couldn't.
Yeah.
So that may have just been BS, but
but then again, too, I mean, if you meet a traveling woman who doesn't talk, does that necessarily mean it was her? There could have been others. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Seems unlikely that she actually made it to Asia, much less all the way back to Belarus or Denmark or wherever she was heading for.
Yeah.
Seems kind of unlikely to make
it. And we're going to talk about this as we get to our second round of theories. But I really think it's important when you look into this mystery to really question the narrative that her destination was Denmark.
Yeah, no, I think that's, we'll talk about that in the second round of theories, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities as to what she was trying to accomplish here. And there is one other possibility as to her fate. There was this Sven Karsten guy that I mentioned earlier on his blog. He reproduces a text of a letter from the sheriff of Hazleton, Daniel Greenfield.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, he was responding to a request from a journalist who was looking into the whole story and the mystery of Lillian. And he wrote that he met her the one time when they arrested her. The second time she passed through, he was not around, so he didn't see her then. Has no idea what became of her, although he did hear a rumor that she married a guy from Telegraph Creek.
Ah, interesting.
Which is, somewhere way up in the north there. And she met and married a guy named, that's what he said in his letter. But again, I mean... Nobody else says that. I mean, I don't know who the hell knows. And I don't know exactly how he got this information. He heard a rumor or what. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it might have come down the telegraph.
Yeah, good. I bet it did, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea. I actually really like this theory, not because I think it happened. It probably didn't.
Yeah.
But it kind of fits with how, after spending some time with this mystery, I view Lillian.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could maybe push on forward to the second round of theories.
Yeah, because that's it sort of fits in with one of my possible theories here about what she was up to.
Okay.
What she was doing. So.
All right. So it's like, because this doesn't get talked about enough. You know, you read blogs about this and everyone's saying, like, did she make it? And
well,
I mean, kind of the answer is if, like, she'd showed up in Denmark, we'd probably know.
Yeah. Did she make it? Well, you know, if you mean, did she accomplish her goal? Maybe she did.
That's,
we don't know what her goal was. That's what we're going to speculate about now. Yeah.
Right. Right.
What was she up to with her long walk?
All right.
Let's see. What do we got for theories here, Vincent?
Well, let's go with the one theory that I definitely heard, that she was trying to get back to Belarusia.
Yeah. Or somewhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could be Denmark, too. That's true. I've heard both.
Yeah.
I got real. I really don't like the Belarusia theory. But
yeah,
that's how I was introduced to this case. But the more I've looked into it, the more I just don't think she was from Belarusia.
No, the census that I mentioned that I saw the page from, parents were listed as being from Denmark.
Yeah. And so, Alling or Ailing or however you want to say it is a Danish name. So don't know why you'd have somebody who was born in Belarusia with a hybrid Danish-English name move to the United States and decides to walk the wrong way round, especially when she had the boat passage in her pocket.
Yeah.
The whole thing, even if she was a little nuts, the whole thing doesn't really hang together.
No.
I think it's possible that she was Danish, but I just don't know that it's possible. I don't know that she was trying to get back to Denmark.
I don't know either, because I mean, the thing about it is too, is that, she actually didn't speak any Danish. She knew some words, but that was about it. I mean, so she really wasn't, you know, she'd be better off really in England or in America or wherever, but, but so that's another reason not to move to Denmark.
Could see her doing something irrational, like trying to go to Denmark. I mean, I've had that thought. I have family from Italy. Mm-hmm. I've heard stories about Italy, but I haven't really spent much time there. And there have been times in my life where I was unhappy and I was like, I'm just going to buy a plane ticket to Rome. I'm going to get a bus out to the countryside. I'm just going to be sitting in a chicken field with a bottle of wine, leaving all this behind. Of course, it's not realistic. I can't stay there. I don't have citizenship. It would take everything in my bank account and more to do that. But
I mean, a lot
you
of
think about it. I mean, come on, haven't you had that thought before? Something like that?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people want to go live in Italy or England or Spain or something like that. I mean, my old podcast partner Devin actually is of partial Italian descent, and she's actually sort of thought off and on about moving to Italy. Not forever, but just, you know, to live there for a while, which, you know, would be kind of awesome, you know? And so, you know, everybody does that, really.
Yeah, I mean, like we were saying, like if she grew up on stories about how wonderful the homeland was, then maybe she wanted to get back there.
Yeah.
But I don't, but the way she did it, unless she was just
it's just
totally
nuts.
Out of her gourd, doesn't make any sense, especially if she had the money.
Yeah, she had the money. The thing about it is that it wasn't exactly totally cost-free to walk across the continent. She still had to pay money to buy food and so, you know, if she couldn't find a place to stay for free, then she'd have to go to a hostel or a boarding house or something and pay a few bucks.
Well, it seems like she did that she did buy things.
She did. She had to. I mean, and so she got, I'm sure she got, you know, when she could stay in a farmer's barn for free, she would, but sometimes she had. And so when you tote that all up, it was more expensive to do that probably than to just book passage on a steamer. And there's, you know, all these steamships had crappy little cabins way down deep in the bowels of the ship where you're going to be the first person to drown when you hit the iceberg, you know, and that's why it's cheaper, you know? And so,
I don't want to get us off on a, on another movie side alley that I can always take us down, but I always love in the movie Titanic, I love how you move through all the different sections of the ship. It's the funnest part of that movie, but they get down to steerage and like it's a party. People are drinking beer, they're playing Irish music. I've seen pictures of steerage on those ships. It was not that fun.
Well, you know, I mean, that's why you got to make it fun. You got to bring bring your own fun, damn it. I would have liked to. I still want to go see that Titanic replica that Chinese billionaire made.
I've heard it's crazy. Let's talk about some of the kind of like weirder theories, right? So there's a narrative that we've built up over the last 100 years or whatever around Lillian Alling.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think that even, you know, if you're casually interested in the story of Lillian Alling, you're going to get sucked into that narrative.
Yeah.
And maybe not even, and I'm not dissing anybody who's done this because I've done it. Mm-hmm. I think you forget to question that narrative that she was on this long walk home, which is romantic, but maybe that's not what she was up to.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, yeah. What were the other possibilities? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
One of which is, I think this is even more likely, really, is that she was just looking for a husband. You know, I mean, so according to Sven Karsten, he said that she finally left home just out of frustration and anger when her younger sister got engaged. And if she was doing any reading, and I assume she was, maybe she had heard all about the Klondike gold rush and how there was this huge surplus of men in the Yukon territory. And of course, by the time she got up there, the gold rush was actually long over.
Almost 20 years over, right?
Yeah, exactly. But she'd be a day late and a dollar short, which is, by the way, no judgment on her. That's the story of my life, too. But even so, even at that point, most of the gold-seeking prospecting men had already left. There was still a pretty favorable male-female imbalance in that region for Lillian.
Yeah, up to a lot more guys still today. Girls.
Yeah, there is. So, you know, maybe that's what she was doing. Maybe she was just going to the one part of the world where she was most likely to find herself a man.
I want to temper that because I think that's, yeah. I don't know. I like where your head's at, but I don't quite. Okay, I get a different version of that exact same theory, which is that maybe she felt misunderstood.
Yeah.
And wanted to, and this could be for romance, it could be for community. She just wanted to head out on the road to find somewhere where people wouldn't judge her for being like she was, where she might be able to find friends and a husband, a partner of some kind. I mean,
she's not bad looking.
Not at all. It's not like she needed to go to the ends of the earth to find love. I think she probably could have worked that out, but maybe she wanted to find that on her own terms. That sense of community where she wouldn't have to change who she was and how she acted that made her such an alien in her own community.
Yeah. So she maybe felt like, you know, I'm going to have to act like a certain sort of woman and I don't feel like doing that. But if I go to Alaska or go to the Yukon, because there are these stereotypes, which are maybe true, maybe not, that the kind of guys who wind up out in the boonies in places like this are the kind of quirky, rustic, grizzled prospector dudes who really actually would maybe prefer a woman who doesn't talk, you know, that kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or maybe she just thought, if I just take off, I'm going to eventually find someone who understands.
Yeah. And that's a good point, too. It's kind of like the difference between looking in your church for true love or getting on the internet and, you know, looking for true love. You're definitely broadening the number of possibilities when you get outside your own little cocoon. But another reason I like this series is that if her destination was not a place with a lot of single men, and all she was going to do was just hit the road and just see the country or whatever, and just walk and walk and walk, why wouldn't she have chosen a route further south? Because she took a hard, if she's just out randomly walking, she took a pretty damn hard way to go. It would have been a lot warmer and less dangerous for her to like walk across the country to California than to head up to the freaking Yukon.
And she made more or less a beeline. You know, there are people who, as they say, set off to ramble. You know, they're just rambling. Is that a term foreign listeners are going to understand?
Yeah, ramble. I feel like that's kind of a rambling dude.
I don't know. A lot of people are. So, you know, when you're rambling, you're just there to travel around. You just want to go. And I know people I've known people in my life who are like that. They've just got that wanderlust and they set off not really with a destination. The journey is the destination. But Lillian
seemed to have a destination, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, that's she was point. Making good time. She was headed, you know, if you look at her supposed route, apparently she wanted to be somewhere in the direction she was heading.
Yeah, it seems like that to me too. Yeah.
Let's talk about your last theory with that.
Well, there's another possibility I thought that occurred to me a little later on is after I wrote some of this other stuff is that perhaps she just wanted to do something really, really noteworthy. And she had this and she actually really was planning on crossing the Bering Strait. But what her real plan was is to walk around the world and just to set some sort of new cool record, because maybe that's what she felt like. She felt like she didn't get any respect from her family because she'd never done anything interesting. And maybe she thought, I'll show them.
Yeah.
I'm going to go off and do something really freaking awesome. I'm going to walk all around the globe. You know, maybe that was her plan.
And the further north you go, the smaller that globe gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true too.
Right.
So
cool thing to walk around the equator, but that's going to take you a lot longer than walking around the Arctic Circle.
I'd really think that that's a possibility. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's too bad Lillian wasn't a little more talkative. But then again, if she'd been more talkative, I don't suppose there'd be so much of a mystery, and we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it now.
Can I fire off one last theory?
Yeah, what's that?
This is late in the episode, Weirdo Caldoni theories, but I'm going to put one out there.
Yeah.
Ready for it?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter?
Doesn't matter. That's my theory. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. No, serious. What if Lillian just had something she needed to do and she went off and did it and she was smart enough to know that that may be the end of her, and she had come to a place in her life that she was okay with that. Mm-hmm. She got everything she wanted out of it. Mm-hmm. She met new people. She saw new things.
Yeah.
She headed off into a quiet wilderness that maybe she was attracted to, that maybe she loved. And she met her end out there somewhere, maybe Alaska, maybe Canada, mm-hmm. maybe Russia, maybe somewhere even weirder than that. And it's not really super important to the story of this woman, exactly what the motivation was, exactly what became of her, but it was the doing of the thing. And that mm-hmm. sounds really esoteric, but when you read about people who are wanderers in history, like going back to the Bible even, often it's not about those reasons that when I set off on a destination, when I'm going somewhere, I want to get to the place. I do want to see the things along the way, yes, but I have a reason why I've left. I have a place I want to arrive at, and I have a goal I wish to accomplish. For some of these people, historically, these ramblers don't have that. And mm-hmm. maybe it just occurred to me when I was reading your script, Joe, maybe we all miss the point when we try to unravel the mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just wanted to leave that out there. Yeah. I know that's a little wishy-washy. Some people get annoyed with me and I go off on these tangents, but I'm putting it out there because it matters to me.
Yeah, it might have been. She just wanted to head on down the road and see how far she could take it. And she realized it was probably going to kill her. You know, mm-hmm. maybe she realized that from the start, but it was all about just how far can I get before I die? You know? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, she attained her goal.
Yeah.
She reached her destination
because mm-hmm.
her destination was the place where she died. And so she got there. Yeah. And so that could be it. And then one last theory that I have is that the whole thing is just random neurons firing off. Maybe she was just crazy, you know?
Crazy, neuroatypical is the term that we like to kick around. I don't like calling her crazy because, and partly that's not just to be like PC. To me, crazy, when you use it colloquially, implies that you don't know what you're doing. You're off on you're just a goofball.
Mm-hmm.
Lillian clearly had a plan and she executed at least some of it quite handily.
It seems that way, but you can't, but did she really have a plan? I don't know.
That's true. I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah,
looking at the progress she made, it seems like she had something of a plan.
Well, it seems like she did, but like for example, when they arrested her in Hazleton, they looked through her stuff, and she's got three freaking pieces of bread and a little tea.
Good point. That's a good point.
I mean, well, how good of a plan is that?
Well,
I don't know. It's like,
Well, once again, we're back to that old, the map is not the terrain. Maybe the plan was running short, and Sheriff Grinfield really helped her out.
Yeah, that could have been, or maybe her plan was just to rely on the kindness of strangers.
Maybe. Maybe she knew she could make it up that telegraph road.
Yeah. Well, and actually that paid off for her fairly well. A lot of people actually did help her out along the way.
I think they kept her alive.
Yeah. Which is why I don't think if she did actually make it across the Bering Strait to Siberia, I'm not quite so sure that she would have made it all the way across Siberia to Europe, because frankly, Siberia is a pretty empty place. It was, you know, it's empty now, it was way more empty then. And there wouldn't have been nearly so many kindly strangers to help you out. And
yeah.
So I think she probably would have perished in Siberia if she made it.
So if she made it, I think she absolutely perished in Siberia. If that's where she was headed and that's where she ended up, if you do the math on the fuzzy math on her getting there, she would have been leaving the area, which is sometimes called Beringia around the Bering Strait, and entering Siberia right as fall and winter hit. That's nearly a death sentence.
Yeah.
Unless something happened to her out there that, you know, I don't know, she got a horse or something. I don't know that, you know, that I don't know about her, you know, but if she was continuing as she had been actually getting to the Bering Strait itself, crossing the Bering Strait itself, if she'd done that, she'd have had so much more peril ahead of her. That wouldn't have been, I got to Russia, made it. She'd have been in a lot of trouble over there.
Oh God. Yeah. God. Yeah. I wouldn't want to try to cross Siberia today. Christ's sakes, you know?
No, it can mess. I mean, even if you have, you know, modern backpacking stuff, you generally want to stay stay out of Siberia in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. And she was headed for it. And, you know, you think of Canada, the part of Canada that she's in around Hazelton, so the north of BC, it's a lot more forgiving a place. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that she would have made it through that winter.
Yeah,
of 27, if she hadn't been arrested and kept and put in the jail where they were able to keep her warm and fed her.
Yeah, no, I don't know. But you know, I don't know how far we need to go down that road anyway, because I find it hard to believe she survived her little boating trip down the Yukon River.
I do too. I'm 100% yeah. with you all the way, Joe.
Yeah. So anyway, there it is. I mean, we have not really solved the mystery of Lillian Alling.
Yeah. I'm happy to leave it unsolved. What about
yeah,
you?
Yeah, no, it seems to be one of those stories that is intended for that very thing. And who knows? Maybe she actually did make it all the way down the river. Who the hell knows? If anybody has any insights, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, by all means. We're going to give you the information. Our good friend Tess is going to come on and tell you how to get a hold of us. And I would love to hear your thoughts on anything we've talked about here today.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Final thought, too. Some of you may have noticed that we've suddenly started putting commercials in. That's not a mistake. We did that on purpose because we need a little money to pay the overhead. It costs us, what, $20 a year to maintain our web hosting?
No,
it's actually more than that. But anyway, so we are plunking a few commercials in. I hope you guys don't mind. And that's about it for me. Oh, yeah. Leave us a rating and a review. We like that.
It really helps people find our pod. It helps.
Yeah, exactly.
All of that stuff happen. So,
Do it. Yeah.
Write us a good review. Just go do it right now.
Come on, 10 seconds. Slacker, do it. all right. That's about it. I guess until next week, how do you say? Oh, yeah. Das Vidonia.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter @shockingdetails. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.